Welcome to September's Open Systems Insight, sponsored by Leidos. Now here's your host, Eric White.
Since the concept of open systems has been in use for around 20 years, the practice has evolved to fit its users' needs. This was especially true within the Defense Department, where it was being used more and more to help improve the agency's buying power. A new purpose means a new definition, so the question arises, what is considered open systems today? To find out, Federal News Radio's Jason Miller spoke with Nick Girton, Senior Software Systems Engineer at Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute.
So I started with the Navy initially as working on open systems back in the late 90s when we didn't even call it open systems at the time. And it evolved as a practice. And then the Navy got good at it. And during the days when Ashton Carter was the acquisition executive, he started the Better Buying Power Initiative. And I got pulled into that to help along. And what we were finding as we were proceeding with that, trying to get the Defense Department to get the best deal possible out of the things we were acquiring, that modularity and openness were really necessary to get the kind of buying power that the government was trying to establish. And as I worked through the other services in trying to figure out how to apply those practices into programs, we were looking for all the best ideas we could get. You know, the best ideas from commercial, the best ideas from the different defense services, and anywhere we could get them. And so the idea of creating components that have modular design and open interfaces to the rest of the systems were the way to concentrate the government's buying power and be able to create the greatest amount of synergy and open up market opportunities for a variety of different providers. And so that was a big focus of how we were trying to transform the Defense Department's acquisition practices to get smaller in terms of the kind of the increment of capability, but broader and more comprehensive and complex in terms of the capability we're providing out to the warfighter.
So I've heard the term modular before. A lot of times you hear modular, now you hear agile, iterative development. So are we talking, when you say smaller, that's what I think of. And then when you talk about open, one of the things that comes to my mind when we talk about open is non-proprietary, so open source, but this is not quite open source. This is not the way you're using it.
Right. Actually, they're a part of the same discussion, but really you could get a modular, closed, proprietary system where the person or the company that provides it to you has all the kinds of flexibility under their hood, but you don't get a chance to express that in terms of alternative sources and the power of competitive alternatives through a market dynamic with the rest of alternative providers. So that's the open side of it. But if you were just going to make an open systems without the power of modularity, then it's one big, large thing. And yeah, you can share a lot of the information about it to someone else, but good luck figuring out how to get a new capability in. So those are matched pairs. And then when you look at open source, it's a little bit of a different animal because now you're getting a large number of people to figure out how to make the best possible thing. They're opening up alternative innovations into a design. But those are kind of modules of capability, if you will. You get an open source product and you can integrate it into your system. And that's a different way of sourcing a capability.
And that helps because I think so many times we have these words, right? And the words are just, we hear them, but we're not really sure what they mean. Mm-hmm. So let me back you up. You said this actually started when you were doing some work with the Navy back in the late 1990s. What type of systems, if you can, give me a kind of a broad perspective of what types of things was the Navy or other services that you worked with, what were they looking to buy in a modular, open way?
So the first program that really started down this path was the Acoustic Rapid COTS Insertion Program as part of the Program Executive Officer for Submarines. And that was the first time we were using commercial technology and modern software development practices to create a military capability. At the time, think this is the Berlin Wall fell, the Clinton administration, you know, we're going to do a big downturn in terms of the amount of R&D spending going into the Defense Department, the peace dividend. At the same time, the Russians still had very capable submarines and were putting out to sea We had challenging opportunities to exercise with smart operators of diesel-electric submarines. And our submarines were having a tough time with that. And so our fleet came to the acquisition folks and said, we don't care what it looks like. Just make it better. The actual sonar arrays still had lots of capability left in them, but the inboard signal processing, the computers inside the submarine, couldn't get there. So we were just looking for whatever we could get our hands on that would bridge this divide between, you know, acoustic capability and tactical performance for the Navy. That was at the time when MIL-SPEC was no longer required as a default situation, and we were allowed to get creative. And we did. In fact, we even got creative with the legacy model of support. We said, we're going to just keep the lettuce fresh in the refrigerator. We're going to do technology refreshes as we insert new advanced capability. And in fact, 20 years since then, that technology insertion, advanced capability process is still very much in play in PEO submarines. So, but then we looked at how do we migrate that out of submarine sonar into the rest of the submarine. I was the chief engineer for combat control. I worked with other participating managers building radar and imaging and all kinds of other things in the submarines. And then we looked at how do we apply that to the rest of the Navy, integrated warfare systems on surface ships, command and control systems with coming from Space and Naval Warfare Systems Command. And that's how it kind of grew out of one place that showed success, was able to let go of older buying practices and get innovative in how we were acquiring capability.
And what's fascinating about what you just described is really an innovative way of thinking. We always talk about, is there innovation in procurement? And a lot of people will say, well, no, there's no innovation. People are so risk averse. We hear that time and again. So was this a tough conversation to have? Did people get their head around, okay, we're going to buy smaller capabilities that are easily integrated with other existing systems, and we're going to build on top of each of those capabilities to get better, more capabilities? Is that something people get their head around? Is open systems even today something people just don't quite get?
So big organizations don't transform easily. So it's been
let's use your Navy, right? Let's use your Navy. You can't turn the Navy ship that quickly, right? The battleship.
Yeah, aircraft carriers, if they're going fast and you give it a rudder order, they don't actually just move right away, right? And so this is one of those kind of situations where we've had amazing success. I will have to say, though, that it's been one of those, you know, big organization transformation efforts that doesn't happen immediately. That said, one of the things that was really surprising to me, one of my good friends, now retired Admiral Jim Shannon, when I started working for him, when I went over to PEO for IDA, Integrated Warfare Systems, as kind of the Navy's open architecture guy, he had had a meeting with industry and saying, hey, we want this open system stuff, and these are the ways we want it. And the industry guys basically came back and said, no problem, happy to do it for you, but you got to put it in your contract. So this seems really mundane, right? So contract guidance. All right, so we wrote a little book, contract guidance. And we put things in there like, how do you ask for it? How do you grade it when it comes back to you? What are the deliverables you should get when you actually start developing the system? What should you insist on? Seems pretty straightforward, and it wasn't that hard to put together. I had worked on some contracts. We culled other best practices from other parts at the time in the Navy and came out with a contract guidebook, updated a couple of years later, and that's when the Better Buying Power program came along. And I was in a meeting one time when Dr. Carter showed up with the Navy's open architecture contract guidebook and said, hey, I just got through reading this. It's pretty good. Can we have this for everybody? And that sounded like a great action item to take. So we worked with the other services and we put together the DoD Open Systems Architecture Contract Guidebook. And we published it. And it's been used widely across the defense services. And more contracts are coming out with open systems as a default starting point for how the contract is going to flow out. Now, kind of the next turn of the screw, if you will, is applying modularity to that acquisition practice. And one of the things I worked on with a couple of colleagues earlier in the year was to kind of think through the rest of that. So open systems, contract guidance, modularity, what does that mean to the way we organize, the way we strategize our budget, the way we execute our contracts? Those muscle movements still have yet to be exercised. So we're kind of progressing along this path. I'd like to say that we've miles to go before we sleep, but we're not done yet, and we still have a ways to go, but we can see what that direction is starting to look like.
How much of an impact did Better Buying Power have in the push towards modular open systems? I mean, you talk about Ash Carter bringing in the Navy's book and really pushed it, because Better Buying Power also had a big impact on, for instance, LPTA, Lowest Price Technically Acceptable. I know it's not part of our conversation per se, but there's some short-term things that it did and that have kind of tailed off, and there's some long-term mm-hmm. things that continue to go. Are you seeing this as one of those long-term impacts of Better Buying Power?
So that's one of the fun parts about working through the machinery of government. I'm going to say fun. It's kind of like just like a sharp stick in the eye.
You got to say in air quotes on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. Getting those kinds of activities and preferred practices into the machinery, like the Defense Acquisition Guidebook, the acquisition framework, the instruction for how to buy systems. And we actually worked those things into those foundational documents, and now those are the default starting point as people come in and start new things or to figure out how they're going to upgrade the things that they have. So it's now a part of... It's evolving into the machinery of government.
Are you beyond the Navy? Are you seeing other services or other parts of DoD that are evolving too? Like who would you say, along with the Navy, is out in front using modular open systems?
So both the Army and the Air Force are making amazing progress in this area. I've worked extensively with the Army in their Future Vertical Lift program. Some of the work they've done with battle management and other command and control systems. The Air Force has been working with the other services on things like the Future Airborne Capability Environment Consortium. They've established some other practices under the auspices of the Open Mission Systems. All the services are marching along this direction because they see the opportunity to get better performance with the money that they have. And there was a time we were pushing for money, cost savings. But really what we found is that the thing that gets people's attention is to do more with what they have. Because every program has got unfunded requirements. Every program has got maintenance debt that they can't figure out how to work their way through. And so everybody wants to do better with what they have. And modularity and open systems is just another tool in the toolbox for pushing through those problems and getting better performance.
Nick Girton is Senior Software Systems Engineer at Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. Hear more of the interview after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
IT modernization, a far-reaching concept when you think about it. That's why Leidos has rolled out a clear-cut, user-centric approach to IT modernization that boosts productivity while securing the IT backend. Learn how Leidos is advancing the digital workplace with proven solutions in collaboration, mobility, cloud, DevOps, data centers, and network modernization. Visit Leidos.com/modernize to see the approach. That's Leidos.com/modernize.
We continue listening to our interview with Nick Girton, Senior Software Systems Engineer at Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute. He spoke with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller.
Nick, we've been talking a lot about the DoD side. Let's talk about the civilian side a little bit. Are you starting to see the civilian agencies pick up modular open systems, or have they not kind of followed quite as closely as DoD has?
So I don't work with the other agencies as much, but we have been seeing some areas where they've been making very good progress. Some of my colleagues at the Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute work with some of the other non-defense departments, and they're making progress in this area. I will have say, though, that one of the things that we're continuing to do is keeping an eye on what's happening in the commercial space, because improved software acquisition practices and technical architectures and development methodologies like Agile and DevOps, cloud computing, all of those things are actually a part of the set of tools that people can use when they're developing modular and open systems.
One of the things that you, when you talk about the do more with what you have, and I think that that's a really interesting piece because the White House, the Office of Management and Budget, they've really been pushing agencies to this IT modernization piece. And part of this is the technical debt. You need to get out of this debt that you have. Tony Scott, the former federal CIO, talked about how much technical debt agencies would have, it would come due over the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. Is that probably the biggest benefit of moving in this direction of modular and open systems, is you can get out of debt more quickly?
I wouldn't say it's the biggest, but it's a big one. The biggest, of course, is to get more capability into the hands of, you know, the customer, in my case, you know, warfighters. But one of the ways you get that is by working down some of the stickiness and gooiness of your infrastructure and helping to push in some of those better underpinnings, that foundation of your system, so that you could do those changes at the capability level more fluidly. Working through things like how to do modularity and capability changes in smaller pieces in more often. Well, how do you test that, right? How do you go through things like safety critical certifications? That's an area of rich research, and we're making some progress on that, but we don't have that one completely figured out yet. That's kind of like, as we're marching through these problems and figuring out what things we need to research and come up with better practices on, that's one of our next turns of the screw.
Nick Gurdon is Senior Software Systems Engineer at Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. One more break, then stay tuned for the last part of the interview. I'm Eric White.
IT modernization, a far-reaching concept when you think about it. That's why Leidos has rolled out a clear-cut, user-centric approach to IT modernization that boosts productivity while securing the IT back-end. Learn how Leidos is advancing the digital workplace with proven solutions in collaboration, mobility, cloud, DevOps, data centers, and network modernization. Visit Leidos.com/modernize to see the approach. That's Leidos.com/modernize.
We now bring you the final part of our interview with Nick Gurdon, Senior Software Systems Engineer at Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute. He spoke with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller.
One of the things we hear a lot about when we talk about DevOps or Agile or iterative development, you talked about that, is the orchestration and automation piece. And when agencies talk about doing software development in this manner, they seem to have that down. Hey, we can orchestrate and automate a lot of the tests that we need. Is open systems different in the sense that, and I want to put, maybe draw a finer line here, we're not just talking about software, but we're talking about hardware and software, and we're talking about systems versus a set of code that we're applying today, and then a set of code we're applying tomorrow, and another set of code we're applying on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That's the difference between maybe agile and iterative, the way we talk about today, and open systems.
Let me match up a couple of things out of that. One is the work that the Deputy Secretary of Defense for Systems Engineering is working on for digital design and how to do model-based systems engineering, which is more than just software. It's the whole systems engineering piece of, you know, what's the hardware, what's the software. A lot of these things we're creating for the military are cyber physical or Internet of Things. There's like missiles that fly or guns that shoot, that kind of stuff. So we want to do the whole systems engineering trade space in how to better express modularity and component level replacement in both hardware and software. Now, the Agile DevOps piece of it kind of flows along, and I think that there's interesting work that we could do in how to get more Agile across the entire design space, not just software.
One of the things that you're seeing is that push to be more Agile, this understanding. And if you look at, for instance, some of the NIST publications around system security, they're not only taking a risk management approach, but they're talking a systems engineering approach, which is most different. I mean, Ron Ross, who is one of the leaders in the cybersecurity world over at NIST, we'll talk about, it's the holistic viewpoint. We probably hear that often. Mm-hmm. Is that one of the other things about open systems that is a benefit? Is it lets the user, lets the program manager step back and say, okay, what's my entire world and how do I kind of apply the next set of capabilities to my world versus just focusing on a single component or a single system?
So as program managers figure out how they implement these practices in their programs, one of the things that they will be challenged with thinking through is how do I do capability upgrades and then also make sure I hit all my interoperability requirements? How do I put out new capability that can also talk with the other stakeholders that I have in my world? And one of the other kind of layers of openness that we need to work our way through is the idea of data architectures. So we're talking about kind of like the underpinnings of the system, the capabilities that ride on that underpinning, and then at the top is how does it talk to the other things it needs to talk to, the other thing it needs to relate to. So an evolving practice in this space is data architectures and coming up with open standards for how information is packaged and both provided and consumed dynamically. That is something that we haven't really expressed and played through very well yet, is how to dynamically recognize there's a new piece of valuable information and how to take advantage of it. Because if we're updating our systems at a more rapid pace, more consistently, then we also need to figure out how to take advantage of new pieces of information.
The data piece is probably the most interesting, because when you talk to CIOs, you talk to program managers, it's not about the technology anymore. It's not about the people. It is a little, maybe, but it's always about now the data. What can I get out of my data? What are my known knowns? What are my unknown knowns? What are my unknown knowns? And I think that is the piece. Does using open systems, does going to a modular way allow you to access the data more easily, or at least allows you to understand it more easily? I know the standards are important, but even if you don't have standards, can you get to unstructured data more easily?
So we used to talk in the open systems world about published interfaces. But as we progressed through this, we're also now starting to talk about, but published in a way that other people can understand, which is the reason why data architectures are so important, especially when it comes to mission critical and safety critical systems. Those need to be thought through and made available in a rigorous way. And so Internet of Things also plays into this. How do we make sure that the information we provide is recognized and consumed in the right way? And having those discussions about, well, what did you mean by depth or altitude or range? And how do you make sure that those pieces of information are precisely understandable when they're discovered? And that is really a new piece that we're working our way through, but it's going to take a while.
Nick, this has been a fascinating conversation. We're just about out of time. Before I let you go, as more and more agencies start to look at open systems and modular approaches, talk maybe about things they should keep in mind. What are some potholes that they should avoid? What are some common best practices that maybe you think would be worth highlighting?
So I did some research earlier this year with a couple of friends, one from Vanderbilt, Dr. Doug Schmidt, and at Carnegie Mellon University, Dr. Bill Shurlis. And what we talked through was, how do we take advantage of things like technical architectures? And how do people take advantage of things like consortiums and the way to build their products on a foundation that is knowable by many companies? So things like I mentioned earlier, the Future Airborne Capability Environment Consortium, about 90 different companies figured out a software standard for real-time cyber-physical systems.
That's Nick Gerton, Senior Software Systems Engineer at Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. You can find this entire interview online. Head to federalnewsradio.com and search Insight of the Month. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to this week's Open Systems Insight show, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Open Systems.